What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Matas from DNVR. I'm joined by my co-host, from senior NBA writer for the Action Network. It's Matt Moore. Matt, what a day of basketball in the NBA, man. This might have been my favorite one, and that's saying something. There's been some good ones.
Just wild from start to finish. The Clippers storm back with their bench to take out the unstoppable Portland Trailblazers as regression hit something nasty for that team in the second half of their game.
Can I tell you, though, real quick about this? Everybody was over, but Portland, I was so unimpressed with them. And Denver almost did this. I mean, Bol Bol almost pulled it out against Portland. So I'm glad that sort of Cinderella doesn't turn into a pumpkin, does she?
The carriage.
Pumpkin. All right. Well, I'm glad the carriage is turning back into a pumpkin for the Blazers.
Yeah. I mean, it turns out that Gary Trent Jr. is not going to shoot 70% from 3-point range indefinitely.
Still like
him. And the Blazers are not going to shoot 70. See, this is the thing, though. It's like, it's if I say a guy is overperforming, it's not that I think he's bad. Like, I think Gary Trent, like, I've watched Gary Trent Jr. this year and been like, oh, that kid's got some tools. Like, he can be pretty good in some time.
Yeah, yeah.
But when he shoots 70% from three over the course of four games, I'm like, well, that's going to crash back to earth, and that's going to be nasty when it does. Like, what are they going to do when he's not shooting 70% from three?
You're saying is that Blazers might, you know, not be as good as they seem. Gary Trent Jr. is not as good as he seems, but the Phoenix Suns, they are absolutely as good as
absolutely.
Just let it be predicted.
And then Utah Denver goes to double overtime. A phenomenal game, back and forth. We'll get in all the details on that. The Pacers upset the Lakers behind TJ Warren, just absolutely going in fuego again.
I know. I love
Anthony
that,
Davis looking horrible in that game. Phoenix continues to be undefeated, putting pressure on the Trailblazers, who would be coasting the play-in right now if it wasn't for the Suns. And then in a back-and-forth affair to end the night, Luca goes for 36 and 19 assists in an overtime win over the Bucks. 136-132, just a phenomenal day of basketball start to finish.
What the game everybody's interested in, I think we're most interested in, is this one between Denver and Utah. A little bit of a rivalry game. It definitely felt like a playoff game. There was a lot of intensity, so we're going to break into all the details. Before we do, I want to let you know a presenting sponsor today, Rock Auto. You can go to rockauto.com. I'm going to talk about them a little bit later. But first, Matt, to this game, Jamal Murray is back. And that was, to me, one of, if not the storyline of this game. There's so many storylines, to be honest. But it was one of the big storylines for the Nuggets in the bubble. Jamal Murray, a hamstring injury, had held him out of the first four games. He returns tonight. What did you think of him?
And typical, it was such a Jamal game. It had, like, everything.
It really was.
Where there's so much to critique, and at the end of it, he winds up gutting out just an absolutely, like, he's dragging his hamstring around the court, and he manages to get two huge buckets to essentially seal the game. I think that there's a lot to dig into in terms of the balance between him, Jokic, and MPJ, how to get those three involved. The offense is going to need a lot of reconfiguring, and the temptation, I think, is going to be to say, well, look, that's Jamal's first game back, and, like, he's just getting – I understand, but these are not things where it's like, oh, I have a lot of reason to suspect that Jamal can manage the floor, and he's always gotten everybody involved. That's not the case. So, like, my concern immediately goes to, like, this is going to be a problem. But they each has – If you're going to do the my turn, your turn thing, the way it worked where, you know, Jamal was good in the first half, okay-ish. Jokic was great in the second half, and so was MPJ. Jamal takes over in overtime. Everybody ate. Everybody got their points. Everybody got their assists. It all worked out in some level of balance. That's pretty good. Defensively, defensively, because of his leg, I think he's even a step behind where he was this year, which he played the best defense of his career this year. That's just not saying a whole lot. It's like he was good at times, especially early on. I thought he was really good, but there's a lot to be to do there. But like at the end of it, kid's nails. Like he gets those tough buckets and helps get a win. And it was just massive. And it was so impressive to see him fight through all that pain to be able to put on that performance and deliver the win.
That's the thing we know about Murray. I mean, that dude, he does seem to get banged up a lot, but he really is as good as anyone at fighting through that. And it was so clear that playing 40 minutes was probably not what he had in mind tonight, and trying to get through that was difficult, but he did it so well. But I want to go back to one of your earlier comments about Michael Porter Jr., Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray all having to come together, because I thought early on in this game, especially in that first quarter, the chemistry between them was horrible. I mean, the defense, I think Malone's going to key in on the defense in that fourth quarter, and Denver was just getting absolutely carved up all over the court. But equally as important to me, you know, I'm an offensive guy. Equally as important to me was that the offensive end of the court just looked like a completely different team. Denver was coming off back-to-back 30 assist games. The off ball was popping, everything else. That first quarter and really the first half, it was so clunky. But there was an interesting comment afterwards. I mean, Jamal Murray in the press conference after the game really talked about his relationship with Michael Porter Jr. a lot. And he kind of talked about it as in, like, I'm the mentor to him, I'm coming on, which I think is interesting. But at the same time, in a very positive way, not in a like, oh, the kid this, the kid that, but just a I'm trying to really help bring him along because we need him type of way. And I just thought that was really interesting. I mean, Murray, I don't know. I think the leadership thing is going to be a long process with him. But it does seem to me like at least he's trying to be that. And I expected him. We've seen Murray in the past. Guys will have a good game. You ask him about it, and he seems almost dismissive. He seemed pretty positive about Michael Porter Jr. in this one, and in a way that really stood out to me.
And that's good. That's good to hear. And if they can make it work, if they can figure out how to make it work, it's going to be awesome. I think a lot of it is just the game doesn't come easy for Jamal. That's kind of my opinion, is because he's not hyper athletic, he's not just able to beat dudes. Yeah. Like we've talked about this a lot, that he just doesn't have, explosiveness or high end top speed. So everything with him is always about adjustments and body angles and, you know, getting crazy shots up, and he has incredible touch.
He's really good at the hard parts of the game.
Yeah. He's really good at the hard parts of the game, and that's really valuable. Michael Porter Jr. is the opposite. That kid shot 1 of 8 from three and still coasted his way to 23 points on 18 shots. Like, he missed 7 three-pointers and coasted to 23 points on 18 shots.
Yeah.
He had a bad game.
It was a bad game, and it was great numbers and great plus-minus.
And had 23 and 11, was a plus 13, the best on the team. Like, it's all very easy for MPJ, and everything is very hard with Jamal. And so one of the things is, if it's hard for Jamal, then Jamal's really got to focus in on the things that make it work. And now you're asking this in completely new element. And like, a lot of it was just, you know, the first half, the way that I try to explain it to people is, I don't root, but I get very frustrated when teams don't do what they should.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I get frustrated when teams, I get frustrated when teams don't do what they should. And honestly, I do the opposite too, which is I get frustrated when teams do better than they should, where I'm like, this is bad process and you're being rewarded for it. And this is irritating to me. But the Nuggets in that first half, I was like, why is Torrey Craig getting all these touches? Why is he touching the ball more than MPJ? Why is MPJ in the corner? Craig made that huge block on that play, and that was a massive play. He had some good cuts. He wound up with 11 points on 9 shot, like shot 5 of 9 from the field. That's good. Yeah. He hit 1 of 2 threes. He only took 2. That's good. But so much of this, and I get it's because Will's not there. I get that part of it, but I still just wind up being like, there are so many minutes where, and it's like, you're in my head now, Mahrez, where every time that he's on the floor, I see the potential of that offensive unit and realize that so much of it is dragged down by Torrey. And a lot of it's that, like, honestly, part of it is that, like, MPJ is not coming to the ball to get it. Torrey will come and get the ball. Like, he'll.
So it's an interesting thing, I think, there with MPJ, because I've saw a lot of people talking about that MPJ kind of. Some people say, oh, he was cut out of the offense. Some people say he's not being aggressive. I think Michael Porter is so hyper aware of what he is at his core, which is a ball hog of high volume shooter who just feels like every shot. I think he's so aware of that, that he's trying so hard to go against it, that sometimes that causes him to be a little bit passive. I mean, how many times have we seen over this last five games where he kind of dribbles and you're like, oh, he's about to shoot it. And he's like, I think I'm not supposed to do this right now. And then, you know, make some kind of other play. So I think there was a lot of that with him tonight. And also there could be, I think, a better job by both Jokic and Murray and maybe even Michael Malone of involving him in it. But to me, there was a lot of Michael Porter just not quite understanding where he belongs. And I think that's pretty natural to be expected.
I think it's natural, but I also, like, this is where I get irritated in terms of when there were a lot of opportunities for Jamal to get him more involved and they didn't. And then if Malone's going to pull him first, which that's fine, he's been doing that. If he's going to take him off the court first and put him with the second unit, because Malone's like, oh, he can provide some boost for our second unit scoring. Well, guess what? You need to run some freaking pick and roll with the kid. You need to get the kid the ball. You can't just put him on the floor and think that's going to lift your offense up, because Monte Morris and Mason Plumlee are like, well, we're going to run the same thing we always run, which is we run pick and roll in this unit. Yeah, that's what we do. Like that was the transition this year. And honestly, that's fine. Like that's the base offense of, you know, 80% of the NBA is a point guard and a center run high pick and roll. And then you vary whatever it is that comes after that. So like, I don't mind it, but part of it is just like, hey, Monte can spot up off ball. He's good in that capacity. He's actually really good about, like, I like Monte off
the
catch. Yeah, I like Monte off the catch and spot ups.
He had a big one tonight.
Yeah, and making decisions. And so I'm just, and it's weird that we're complaining because like this was an awesome game and incredible.
It really was.
But I am just of the mindset of I'm just like, here's honestly my feeling on this. The Nuggets were so bad in the first half. And we're so dominated. And then they woke up and they played better and they started sharing the ball. And once that happened, you could see that Utah was like, uh-oh.
Yeah. I love that thought, Matt. I want to talk about this almost entirely in the second half because I think it's a huge characteristic for the Denver Nuggets. But first, let's take a break. And I want to tell you, it doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. That's almost everybody. There's no such thing as a comfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. And luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller and shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica, never heard of it, and vitamin B6 to give you a support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA for 25% off of your purchase. Back here on the Locked On Nuggets podcast with my co-host Matt Moore. And so here's what's interesting to me. Denver's had the worst defense in the bubble so far. Extremely shorthanded, playing some crazy lineups, a lot of guys out of position, whatever. I personally forgive them for it. I think they can be a better defense than this. And one of the reasons I believe that, Matt, you look at this game, first quarter, they get outscored 29-15, just terrible. Second quarter, they give up 34 points in the second quarter, and they go down at the half. They're going, they started off down. Third quarter, 30-25, okay, starting to get some stops. Fourth quarter, they hold them to 17 points. Denver's a finesse team. They're an offensive team. They don't have a lot of, you know, of those, you know, thump your chest type guys, but I kind of think they've developed this tough identity. And to your point, early in this game, Denver looked like they were getting punked. They looked like they were getting run out the gym. They looked, you know, almost pouty or this or that. In the second half and in overtime, I just felt like they were the tougher team, both mentally and just more confident. I feel like Denver has a nice, I don't want to say swagger because that's not the right word, but they kind of have this confidence, this calm confidence to them right now. Are you seeing that, or am I just kind of riding the high of a double overtime fun game?
No, I think I will say we saw this periodically throughout the regular season. Do you remember the Dallas game where they won? Not the cursed last game of the season, but the one before that where Dallas had torn them up. They'd torn them up for years. It'd been a difficult matchup. it was close. And in the fourth quarter, Denver was just like, all right, we're putting two on Luka and we're shutting this down. We're done.
Yeah.
And it was just like clamps.
Yeah.
I think they have a high gear.
Yeah.
There's two things that I think are related here. They got to hit shots. They have to hit shots for two
reasons.
Definitely
have to hit shots.
One, it's confidence. And two, they simply have bad foot speed back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's not that they necessarily get killed in transition. It's that they get killed in mid-transition a lot. And they're often just like off a half a step. And I think MPJ kind of accelerates that too, where he's oftentimes like, there's a bunch of times in the first half where in mid-transition, MPJ was like, he would look up and be like, oh no. Like you could see that look on his face, like, I'm not supposed to be here. And then Malone takes a timeout. And you can tell Malone's just like, he scored 30 points in three straight games. It's fine. So like that's part of it. But like, Joker's not running back and getting chased down blocks. Jamal Murray's not doing that. Like yeah. Jeremy Grant's the only candidate that's going to make an athletic play in transition. He's the only guy on the team. Him and Torrey are the only guys that can absolutely just buckle down full speed and make a play at the rim in transition if necessary. So like they have a lot of problems, I think, in that area. But they did show that they have that capacity, I think, to really put the clamps on them. I mean, at half, to let you know, like the Jazz were shooting so well. I got a line of 116.5 for the Jazz total, which was way up from open. And I taken the over in this game because I was like, Denver's going to score and Utah's going to score. So I'm taking the over in this game. Yeah. But I looked at the process that Utah had and what they were shooting and was like, they're not going to keep shooting like this. Like Utah's a really good shooting team, but they're not that good.
Oh, and the first half, I mean, it felt like they were just getting open threes and knocking them all down. I mean, they were shots. They were open threes.
Mm-hmm. And I would have absolutely cash that bet had Donovan Mitchell not gone supernova in the last minute and they barely got into overtime. It was one, they finished with 105 points.
Yeah.
I was breezing to that.
Yeah.
Now it's fine because I also happened to find Nikola Jokic 30 points and the Nuggets to win at a hefty number and cashed on that one. Because I
knew Gobert was no match for him. I like it.
I did. Honestly, I'm not even kidding. Like this is the thing is like Gobert won that first, and I tweeted it, and Nuggets Twitter was like,
"They don't forgive."
Did the usual, like, "What now?" And I'm like, it wasn't wrong then. Like, he got better.
Like, I want to stop you there because you're talking about the Nuggets. I've always said this. Teams follow their best player, the rhythm, and Jokic. I think Jokic in the playoffs plays hard for 48 minutes. I think Jokic in regular season plays hard for the second half and picks his spots in the first half. And look, I mean, he was – you weren't wrong. In the first half, Jokic was very much picking his spots. And guess what? None of the spots were his. So he wasn't picking any spots. But in the second half, when they got back into it, it was like an avalanche. It was just – they were just rolling, and it just felt like he could do whatever he wanted.
Well, and it's notable, right? Like I tweeted the numbers earlier that – like the half by half breakdown of who scored when. And it was like the first half, Jokic had 2 points and 4 assists. He was reading and trying to get guys going, and everyone was missing. And also like the offensive structure was clunky and bad, and that frustrates and that makes things tougher. Like honestly, with the way that Jokic was playing, if Will Barton was out there, the Nuggets lead at the half and this thing doesn't go to double overtime. I'm not dismissive of Utah. I think there are teams that Utah can cause problems to, but I don't think they can beat the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are just uniformly better than the Jazz. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But like honestly, this is the thing. Look at what happened in this game. The Jazz shot the absolute lights out.
They really did.
This was one of the best shooting teams in the regular season. Very quietly, their EFG was super high in the regular season. But they made 22 threes.
That's a lot.
They shot 40% from three, and that's counting all the ones at the end that they were clobbering away at.
So Denver, remember the famous Wancho game? I think they tied a regular season record, and I think they had 26. So 22 is not that far off of an NBA record, most three-pointers in a single game. They made a lot of threes.
Right, and in the first half, they shot 12 of 21 for 57% from three, right? So that happened. Donovan Mitchell goes absolutely berserk twice, steals what should have been Nuggets victory away. All of this happens and the Nuggets still win. Like Jokic and Gobert was great in the first half, the way that he oftentimes is before, you know, Joker starts trying.
Right.
I mean, Like, I'm not trying to be dismissive of him, but
we've seen it enough.
We've seen enough, you know, and like he hit that Sombor shuffle and like he's routinely gotten the better of him. And it's like,
it wasn't the Sombor shuffle. Wasn't it, man? It was the like two or three post-ups in a row down the stretch where it wasn't even like he was the one triple spin move he was trying, but some of the other post moves, man, were just like, those were like, this is easy for me post moves.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. He just worked him. And that's what Gobert is supposed to be good at. Like, that's what Gobert is supposed to be good at. And he just, like, can't do anything. And then he fouls him out, and immediately he's just like, we're just going to go ahead and win this game now. Like, I not trying to be dismissive, but very seriously, the Nuggets did not give 100% in this game.
Yeah.
And they won.
Murray was off, 10 of 25. Michael Porter Jr. probably had one of his worst games of the bubble so far.
With 23.
Yeah, with 23 points, which it turns out a terrible game from him.
There
was a bunch of just, I would say, bad luck for the Nuggets down the stretch. I mean, whether it was missed calls or ticky-tack calls or just little things. Like, Denver should have won this in regulation. They should have won it in the first overtime. They kept sort of making it hard on themselves and still walked away with it. So, to me, I'm with you. This was impressive for Denver in that I don't feel like they played that well for most of the game, and they still got away against a team that was having a very good game on their respect.
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, like, look, we will always kind of reduce these things a little bit, and I think that it's important to like remember how much everybody kind of contributed. There was also some interesting stuff late in this game, and I've been asked repeatedly, are we seeing an evolution of the Nuggets? Like, I've been like, Sean Drotar on Late Night with On the Fan has been hammering me on this, trying to get a sense for what I think about if this is like, if the Nuggets are going to be different. And I've been hesitant because I know Malone well enough to know how hard these decisions are for him.
Mm.
When we do the next segment, I have some stuff that I think we need to talk about that. But I do want to say, like, Torrey's block was huge late.
Yeah.
Like, Jamal's buckets were huge. Yeah. Jeremy Grant's all-around play. Jeremy Grant has – and, like, how cool is it that Jeremy Grant for – do you remember, like, you know, there were so many ups and downs. Like, early on in the season, he was not playing well. It was not looking like he was a fit. They were starting to be like, is he really going to be the guy? And, like, he has figured out how to – fit in and looks so good and makes so many plays. You know, PJ Dozier was a minus 13. I thought he had some good sequences.
Yeah, let's put a pin on all this because we should talk about the others, so to speak, and how they fit in. But we do got to hit our last break. And I'll tell you that I've been telling you guys about rockauto.com here for a while. There's an ever-increasing number of makes and models for your car, so it's impossible for you to stock up on all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. By the way, also, it's the year 2020. Everything's online these days, including rockauto.com. So don't endure pointless and seemingly intimidating questioning about your car. You've got computers with access to rockauto.com at your home and in your pocket on your phone. So rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet, whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. You mentioned Jeremy Grant, and I think that he has been one of the revelations of this bubble for the Denver Nuggets. He had another, you know, solid night here, 21 points. His points are almost sneaky. I wouldn't have guessed he had 21 until looking at the box score, but 21 points on 7 of 12 shooting. He didn't really stuff the box score. 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 2 blocks. So I guess the blocks and steals is good. But more to the point, I'm really starting to enjoy his fit alongside Jokic and MPJ. It's funny how sometimes in basketball, you tinker with the different moving parts, and a guy can look terrible in one lineup and great in another. Jokic, Grant, I didn't think had looked that great all year, but you throw him alongside Michael Porter Jr., and I just feel like the three of them come together in a really nice way.
Long boys.
The long boys, I think,
I will not be calling them that. I will refer to them as the 14ers. It's a preference decision. So I think it's notable that Paul Millsap sat late. I think that...
Well, he sat a lot. He only played 22 minutes tonight.
Yeah, and some of that's just resting him and getting him getting him a break. But I do think that there's a transition occurring, and I think part of the transition is the realization that if Paul has a favorite, and Paul's generally struggled with Utah, like it's not a great matchup for him. It's better now that Favors is gone, but in general, he has trouble with it. I think there is a transition happening. It is occurring. I will say this. I've been very skeptical about the idea. Not skeptical. I was skeptical after MPJ's first big game that he would start. I was skeptical after his second game, even though I was then like, okay, he probably needs to. After his third big game, I was like, okay, he absolutely needs to, and I don't know. And after today, and this is actually before today, my understanding of things is that I would now expect him to start no matter what going forward.
Yeah.
That it's going to be him. And I don't think Grant's going to start. I think he'll be first off the bench, because it's a nice thing to be able to be like, okay, we have Millsap, and ideally we have either Gary or Will. And that balance of just guys that know what they're doing should be enough to be able to provide a balance of offense and defense for them to get a lead. You bring Jeremy in with the starters, you put him in maybe the three, and then you can slide him to the four when Millsap sits.
Yeah.
Like, there's a natural like transition where they can evolve the starters into a different unit. But like, we said since MPJ started showing out this year, you and I have been on the same page about next year it's going to be Jokic, Grant, and MPJ. And I've never been more convinced of that than now.
Yeah.
I think Grant, Jokic, MPJ, and then Jamal Point are the four starters I know going forward for Denver.
The two guard
is going to be the tough one. And I know, and like,
for grabs.
It's going to be tough on Nuggets fans. Do they hate Gary Harris for being injured more, or do they hate Will Barton for being Will Barton more? Tough one for them to be able to sort through.
I think Nuggets fans are going to grow to love Barton at the shooting guard spot if should that happen next year. But you know, another one that's kind of funny, though, is I wouldn't be surprised if Torrey Craig got minutes there and maybe could be a guy that, who knows, maybe he starts there. I mean, we know Michael Malone likes to put defense out there. And when you have Murray, MPJ, and Jokic, that's three, in my opinion, very high-level offensive players. The other two guys can kind of fit in. Millsap can shoot. Jeremy Grant can shoot and slash. He might fit there. The two spot, you might be able to get any of those other guys, Barton, Dozier, Craig, what have you. And I don't know. I think that might work.
I think absolutely it needs to be Barton. I just think it needs to be Barton.
That's my preference.
One, it's size. Two, Will's defense this year has been the best of his career.
Especially at shooting guard. He's a long boy at shooting guard. He's short. He's skinny at small forward.
Yeah, and that works really well. And just the idea of having this threat where the defender can't just ignore. Like, you just can't ignore Will. And you can't ignore him from three or on cuts either. Like, he can catch the ball and create with it. Like, when you have MPJ can get his own shot, Murray can get his own shot, Jokic can get his own shot, and Will, like, that's so many weapons, you can't really overcome that. Like, that's, and it's just going to make a lot more sense. Like, Will's just going to make better reads. He's going to make better decisions. He's going to be more, like, if he's open, he's not going to overthink it and record scratch. Like, that unit could absolutely supernova cook once they figure out certain things, because I still think, especially like, part of it is they're going to test drive this in the playoffs, and you know that in the playoffs with that kind of coverage, Jamal's going to go to what he knows. He's going to go to, we're going to run pick and roll 80 times a game.
Yeah.
We're just going to run this, and I don't think that's the best use of these weapons, because now I'm like, you don't have to do that anymore, man. Like, you can run Jokic. Like, my whole thing about Jokic ball and it being readable, that changes when your small forward is 6'10".
Oh, and a mismatch just on the court at all times. And this is the thing about Jeremy Grant, and I've been writing about this on DNVR for the last couple of post-game sort of deep dives. Jeremy Grant defensively has been, you know, mostly a power forward. Michael Porter Jr., mostly a small forward. Offensively, though, they're sticking the taller player on Michael Porter Jr., which means Jeremy Grant has had a lot of guards on him, a lot of, like, undersized wings on him. And he's done, in my opinion, a very good job of using that. Not by crashing the glass, but I don't think it matters because Denver has enough rebounding on the team that they don't need hit Jeremy Grant's rebounding. But he's been in the post. He's been driving to the lane and not necessarily breaking free, but just getting free enough that he can elevate over whoever's guarding him and finish above the rim or finish with a floater. And he's really taking advantage of the fact that defenses are trying to guard him with undersized guys.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot, that he's just like brushing past guys. Like, they just don't have any sort of chance at him whatsoever. And like, just absolutely just like whoosh. And that's what you want to see, right? It's like these direct line cuts and all that kind of stuff. Oh, by the way, we haven't talked about individual plays that much. When Jamal on the sealer, where Jamal looked like he was going to travel and kept that pivot foot down and dished to Grant. Like, one, great cut by Grant. Two, I do not know how Jamal's leg did not disconnect from his body like a He-Man figure. Like, it was
– That was a gross sort of pivot.
it was impressive because I was like, how does he not – but he had the wherewithal to be like,
yeah.
And then throw it and Grant slams it. It was a great play. I think this team is evolving. I think the one thing is, I do not know how you look at these performances and then and look at MPJ today and say, like, he shot 1 of 7 from 1 of 8 from three, and he had 23 points on 18 shots.
Yeah.
Why are we not getting, like, I would just be like, look, we're going to start throwing him in as the screener in Jamal pick and rolls. We're going to start using him in handoffs. Like, I didn't know why they didn't, like, I would just be running two-man game for long sections of the game. And I know that part of that's because you don't trust MPJ to get the entry pass to Jokic.
Yeah, like, I don't know. He's so tall. He sees over the defense so easily.
Right, and so that's part of it. But, like, figure that out. Like, that's why you run it, is to figure that out. Because once you start doing that, it's like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do against that? And so it's exciting. I think it's not the path that I thought this would take. There's been a lot of twists and turns, but look, this Nuggets team is, they're gutsy. But like, this is a gutsy win.
It really was a gutsy win, man.
And it's this weird combination, because you and I are both in agreement that we're like, they didn't really play that well or try that hard, but it was still like, at the end, they had so many chances to just be like, oh, well. Like, overtime especially. Overtime especially, after you've done all that to get back into it and take the lead, and then Mitchell goes supernova, there's a lot of teams that are just like, well, okay. Yeah. And, like, no, they just kept hitting him. They just kept hitting him. And a lot of that was Joker. I thought Joker in overtime was very much in, no, we're not losing this.
Fourth quarter, too. I mean, Denver should have won this in regulation, to be honest with you. Six-point lead with, 10 seconds left or something. I mean, they should have won this one. But leading up there in the fourth quarter, I just thought the guys that Denver needed to step up did step up. Jamal Murray hit some huge shots, made some big plays, some big passes. And it was really encouraging. I'm as encouraged as I have been about just sort of the trajectory of the Nuggets. I'm really concerned about the injuries. I mean, Jamal Murray did not look healthy tonight, and he played twice the minutes he was supposed to. Will Barton is still not there. Gary Harris still not there. So I can't say that I'm, like, very confident about the Nuggets heading into the playoffs, but I am very confident just in what they have assembled with this team, and namely with the three stars. I mean, I was asked this a week ago, how things changed. I was asked a week ago if Denver has a big three, and I said, I'm not ready to say that. I might be ready to say that now.
Say that.
Oh, I think they have a big three.
I think it's I'll pass. So I'm getting myself in trouble there. So
they got three dynamic players. That's really all it means. I mean, sure.
They play Monday versus the Lakers. I don't know what to expect from the Lakers because they've clinched. But they're still trying to get right. Like, they just keep having really bad games. They've shot terribly. They're trying to work out a rhythm. I would be very tempted. Malone, they won't do this. I would be very tempted to go ahead and tank this one. I would go ahead and just rest. I would just go, like, I would get Jokic. I would rest Jokic and Murray. And I would just run out MPJ and Dozier. and run those guys a lot with Bol Bol, and I would play that way. Cause like, honestly, the Lakers will overlook you and you might get a win anyway. Can I go over what the Nuggets situation is?
Oh, yeah, for magic numbers. Let's see this.
So if you follow me on Twitter, I track every year magic numbers in the playoff picture. I'm always doing those things. For the restart, what I've done is I'll tweet this pretty regularly, is I'll tweet charts that have the complete breakdown of if X team goes whatever in the bubble, this is their win percentage. Because everybody didn't play the same amount of games, everyone's like today, even altitude people were like, no, they've got the tiebreaker over the Thunder. And I was like, that doesn't matter because the Thunder played fewer games. So
it's win percentage.
It's win percentage. So this is the situation that Denver finds itself in. Their minimum, if they lose the rest of their games this week, if they go 0-3, they finish with a 0.630 winning percentage. The best that Utah can do is 0.625. No matter what, Denver is ahead of Utah in the standings. They have clinched a top five seed no matter what. The worst they can be is five.
Okay.
The Thunder's best is 0.638.
Just ahead of
the Rockets' best is 0.652.
Okay.
If Denver wins two more, or if Denver wins one and the Rockets lose one, the Nuggets will clinch a top three seed. Their magic number is 2 for a top three seed and avoiding the Los Angeles Lakers. As a kind of note here, the only like outstanding caveat to this is the Clippers. At their lowest is 6-5-2 as well, and they can tie Houston, but Houston and the Clippers can't tie Denver. Because again, they've played different amounts of games, so the winning percentages don't match up. So tiebreaker is not going to matter in any of those situations. And what I'm basically telling you is, if OKC loses tomorrow, Denver clinches a top four seed. If Denver wins on Monday, Houston loses to Sacramento somehow, and then Denver wins, they will have clinched the top three. Like, they can be done with having meaningful stuff to play for by Monday.
That'd be great if they could pull it off.
Now, the problem is they play Lakers, Clippers, Raptors. But look, I have zero confidence. I will say this. The Clippers are not going to play starters in the second to last game. I will go on a limb and say that.
Especially if they've clinched the two seed.
Mm-hmm. They will be done. And even if they – honestly, it doesn't matter, though. Like, it doesn't matter if they clinch two. As long as they're above Houston, that's the key.
Okay.
Is if they're above – if they know that they're not going to fall below three – if they know we're top three anyway, they'll absolutely tank that game. So a lot of it is what happens with Houston between now and Wednesday is really like the big deciding question. The other thing I would tell you is that the Raptors likely not going to play anybody in the last game either. They're one win away or a Boston loss from clinching the two seed. So they'll have nothing to play for in their final matchup with the Nuggets, which is the last game of the regular season.
Okay.
So what I'm telling you is, in all likelihood, Denver is not going to have to play the Lakers in the second round.
They'll probably be a three seed.
Because they got this win today. This win today literally shifted. Like, this shifted a lot today.
I think that's great news. And even if you just kind of look at the standings and say, okay, well, who's likeliest to be the six seed? The likeliest is going to be one of Utah or Oklahoma City, which I think Nuggets fans would probably say those are the two teams you'd most like to face in the first round.
Yeah, so that's the other thing I would say is that I don't think they're going to play Houston. I don't think that they're going to play,
Is about out. Yeah,
yeah, they're going to play. They'll play Dallas.
Oklahoma City or Utah.
Yeah, OKC or Utah, and those are both favorable matchups for Denver.
Yeah, they're going to be tough. That's not a gimme, but it's by far the best of what you could have hoped for.
I would expect them to go six. I would expect them to go six, and with Denver's patent for just screwing games over completely.
They'll probably do that. Yeah.
It'll probably go seven just because this is the West and this is how it is. And it's tough. And it is interesting. I'm much more afraid of OKC than I am. I'm much more afraid for Denver. I would want Utah, and then I would want OKC, and then I would want Houston, and then I would want Dallas. There is, by the way,
people afraid of Dallas. I mean, there
is
good.
There is, by the way, one remaining scenario. I do need to point this. The Mavericks coming from behind to win that game tonight was absolutely massive. And the reason is that the best that Dallas can finish is 0.6. Okay.
Okay.
Houston, OKC, and Utah can all finish below that, depending on what happens. If Dallas wins out, Dallas has a very slim chance of moving up. So Dallas is not out of out of Denver's bracket yet, specifically because they beat the Bucks tonight. This was like, this is what I love about this format, is that I'm able to look at these games and be like, this was an absolute, like, this shifted everything. The Blazers lost today when they blew, when they got outscored 14-2.
I still can't get over that. Unreal.
When they got outscored 14-2 by Terrence Mann and the rest of the Clippers roster. What that did was that kicked open, like, as a pretty good example of what's going on here. If Portland loses one more game, any of their last remaining games, the Suns control their destiny.
I love that.
So, like, there are – and the Spurs are the same kind of way. The Spurs and the Pelicans play tomorrow. That's a loser leaves town match. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's getting interesting. But that loss for Portland, that drastically sets them back for their chance. Like, it looked like they were a juggernaut. And a lot of it's going to depend on what happens with Memphis for the rest of the way. But it's really fascinating to see all this. But there is still a chance that Denver plays Dallas in a 3-6 matchup.
Well, that wouldn't be the worst thing ever, although I do think that would be a tougher one. I'm with you, though, about this format, man. We can kind of close on this. I'm looking at – it's funny because you're talking about – as you're saying this, I'm looking at everybody's schedule. And I think all but one of those games, Portland versus Brooklyn, every other game, whether I was looking at Utah's schedule, whether I was looking at Portland's schedule, whether I was looking at Dallas's, every game I went, ooh, that's a good game. Ooh, that's a good game. Dallas, Philadelphia, that's good. Portland versus San Antonio, ooh, that's good. And I just like it. When all the games are good, basketball's fun.
Yeah, so I'm going to be writing about this on Action. Robbie Callen and I were bouncing the idea back and forth, and he wrote about it over at UpRock, so I'm going to flesh it out a little bit. I legitimately think the NBA should incorporate this. Not the global pandemic. We should probably not do that again. But I think the league should play about 60 games and then take a 1 month hiatus to sort out schedules. And the bottom, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the split's going to be, either 15-15 or 16-14 or 20-10, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they should relegate the bad teams. And the reason you relegate the bad teams and they keep playing is they get the gate revenue, so the owners don't cry poor. And it's like, yeah, but nobody will care about those games. Well, guess what? Nobody cares about your games late in the season when you're 20 games under 500 anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you're awful. And what you do is you set it up to where the winner of the lower bracket, the winner of the lower segment of those games, whoever finishes with they'll play a tournament at the end. Whoever wins that tournament gets two things. They get the number 4 spot in the lottery.
Okay.
And they get the playoff seed, the 16th and final playoff seed.
Oh, wow.
So you get both. You get to be the last team in the playoffs.
I see a few holes in this one, but it's still
fine. We can work it out. We can work out
the details, but I will say
but what
good teams in a sort of bubble, even if it's not a real bubble, putting them together and saying, hey, now it's almost like a pre-playoffs. I'm all for it, man, because this has been really fun.
So there's two. I do keep thinking this, though. How much better is the basketball because nobody's traveling?
Oh, that's a good question too.
I just think that this is making a huge difference, that guys are not having to deal with get on the plane, go in altitude.
Time zones, everything. Yeah, there's a lot.
Switching
right.
Time zones. Get in at 4 a.m., get to your hotel room, unwind, finally get to sleep, up in the morning for shooter. Like, everything is regimented now. These guys are in, like, basketball players love rhythms, and everything is regular. There's no, like, well, sometimes we're going to get in at 2 a.m., and sometimes we're going to get in at midnight. And
that's a great point.
It's just regular. And I think that's one of the reasons why everything looks so good. It's just, like, it's really phenomenal. I have one more thing for you before we go.
Okay.
Home teams are absolutely killing it. They've been absolutely terrific.
Home teams.
Yes.
Hey, who would have guessed? The Zoom fans, man. They really make a difference.
So, but this is the other thing. It's replicated across WNBA too.
Mm.
They're both shooting better from three.
Mm.
That's the big differential. Everything else is flat. but they're
shooting better. I'm going to need to see a couple more weeks of this.
I'm telling you, like, here's where my brain goes, having graduated with a degree in psychology of all things. I really think there's something to do with positive reinforcement. I really think there's something to do with positive reinforcement and the impact on performance. That's what I keep getting to. I think that there's something to do with that.
Well, when I water my oak tree, my newly planted oak tree, every day, I try to say positive things to it. This is a true story. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This is a lot of fun. We're going to be back again on Monday evening, I guess Tuesday morning, in your inbox by Tuesday morning, because the Nuggets have the Lakers, the hated Lakers, and that should be an interesting one. Thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget, leave a 5-star rating and review. Check out all the other shows on the Locked On Network. All sports, every team, including the national show. We'll be back again on Monday. We'll see you then.